HRHeadquarters.ie, the podcast.
Brought to you by Irish Life Health.
Okay, so today I am joined by Oliver Daniels of Bright Horizons and Garrod Kennedy of LMM Care. Guys, you're very welcome to the podcast. How are you both doing?
Great, thank you.
Very good, thanks, Declan.
Good stuff. Oliver, welcome back. I'll start with you. Do you want to just reintroduce yourself? And then, Garrod, I'll just get you to introduce yourself and what LMM Care do.
Certainly. Always a pleasure to join you, Declan. Hello, everyone. My name is Oliver Daniels. I am a business development manager at Bright Horizons Work Plus Family Solutions. We're a firm that specializes in supporting employers around their family-friendly and gender diversity objectives as they look to continue to be future-proofing their organization and getting ready for the challenges that lie ahead, and also driving forward their objectives around improving and increasing gender diversity, which is partly what we're going to talk around today.
Hi.
And Garrod.
Thank you for that, Oliver. Yeah, my name is Garrod Kennedy and I'm with LMM Care, and we provide emergency backup childcare nannies and workers into the home for working parents. So we take care of your little ones when you're not available yourself or when you can't be there. We provide the work, we provide the people to support the work that Oliver does in helping with the whole backup care scenario. We're a nationwide company. We're based in Limerick and we have approximately 450 people working with us at any one time.
Brilliant. Thanks, Garrod. So family-friendly benefits, childcare, I mean, the Irish childcare industry, I'll be interested to get your views on that. First of all, though, it's childcare, family care, it has an impact on gender pay gap. Broader question to begin with, why does the gender pay gap exist in your guys' opinion?
That's a very good question, Declan. I think it's something a lot of people have pondered. I suppose, given Bright Horizons' kind of expertise in working in both the UK and Ireland, one of the benefits we can draw upon is the four or five years now of gender pay gap reporting that's been taking place in the UK, we've been able to look at what's been happening there and apply a lot of those learnings to Ireland specifically. And I think one of really important, as you said, to first of all ask, why is there a gender pay gap? What is it? How does it exist? And whilst no doubt our audience are all fully cognizant of what the pay gap is, it's still helpful to frame it in terms of what it is not. And what it is not about equal pay. Not for the most part, anyway. Equal pay is something that certainly the UK, Ireland, throughout Europe has been, quite frankly, outlawed for several decades now. And whilst I say that, and whilst we know that much of gender pay gap isn't around that, I'd like to take a slight aside here and say one of our more august media organisations in the UK did actually come under an awful lot of fire a few years ago, the good old Auntie B, the BBC, because when it turned out their gender pay gap was actually around equal pay, there was a bit of a scandal. I'm not sure if you remember this, but it turned out that, for example, male TV news anchors were being paid significantly more than their female colleagues. But it's absolutely the exception. The truth is that the gender pay gap is all around deep-seated, historical, societal issues, you might say, just around the fact that, you know, up until a couple of generations ago, your typical work model in the UK, in Ireland, in Europe would be a stay-at-home parent, usually mum, and a working parent, usually dad. And of course, there are exceptions throughout. But what that meant was that led to a tendency for more senior roles to be occupied by men, for middle ranking and junior roles to be occupied by women. So the pay gap reflected that, the fact that most of the people in the senior paying roles or the top quartile would be men, and most of the and it'd be more gender balance, you might say, gender parity in the lower paid quartiles, so to speak. This is absolutely something we've learned has been established almost without doubt through 4 or 5 years of that reporting in the UK. And obviously, the timing is very pertinent right now. We know that finally gender pay gap reporting is a thing in Ireland. I know that you've done some great coverage on that on the HRHQ website already, of course. And what we expect, especially where we work with certain leader employers who are well established in both UK and Ireland, is we're absolutely confident these facts are going to be shown to be true here as well. So I just wanted to touch on that bit first to talk about what the pay gap is not. It's not about equal pay. So it's not about a man and a woman doing the same job and the man being paid more. Not for the most part. One of the reasons we also know this is that the gender pay gap doesn't actually emerge, certainly in the UK, in the 4 years of reporting we've seen, and again, we're expecting to see this in Ireland. It doesn't emerge until women hit the kind of early to mid 30s, basically until they step away from work for a while and take a period of extended leave known as maternity leave or parental leave more these days. It's not fair in our 20s. Think about some of the leading and big employers right here in Ireland who are having graduate intake schemes. You know, they're taking roughly equal numbers of male and female graduates. What you see, what the data shows absolutely is that, first of all, obviously, there's no leading employer that's going to be paying their male graduates more than their female graduates. You see that the career progression of men and women in their 20s after university remains the same. Women achieve the same upward trajectory on their career path as men are doing. So there's no pay gap throughout your 20s. It's only once women step away that the pay gap starts to emerge. And then that's when you start to expose, you might say, how can I put it, some of the fault lines in the ways in which our society and economies are organized, and which ways that some of our organizations are organized as well. Because very often, you know, when a woman's taking maternity leave, when she returns back, she may want to work flexibly. She may want to reduce her hours. And certainly before COVID, and that's something we'll talk about in a minute, and lockdown and people working from home and the upending of the traditional work model, the upending of the 5 days a week in the office piece, those 2 points, you know, working flexibly or working part-time, were basically seen as barriers to any further career progression. So you'd almost see a plateauing of a woman who'd taken maternity leave, who'd been enjoying great career success pre-maternity. Coming back, she'd suddenly stop progressing and developing. And that actually, at that crucial stage, is why you would see a sudden narrowing of the availability of female talent further down the career path line, so that you weren't seeing women getting promoted into senior leadership positions, into C-suite positions, into executive positions. And again, this is data that we've seen time and time again in the UK, hundreds of companies, thousands in fact. It's there, it's in the public domain. It's really clear and obvious. So I just wanted to touch on the fact what equal gender pay gap isn't, and why some of the broad brush reasons we're seeing that it does emerge. And I think that's really useful context for any organization of any size, any ambition. And one of the things that's interesting is Ireland is looking to go beyond almost the level of reporting the UK's got. So it's raising the bar, if you like. So we know that smaller employers, for example, are going to be required to report on it. Employers of less than 250, I believe. Correct me if I'm wrong there. Whereas in the UK, only 250 and above. So we know that Ireland's going to have even more exacting requirements around the reporting. We, from what I understand, from what I've read of the legislation, Ireland is also going to ask employers to provide a clearer pathway, a clearer map, a clearer plan as to how they hope to address and eventually start to narrow their gender pay gap in the years to come. And I think I'll hand over to Jerry to give a bit of his perspective on all of that. But I think what's going to be interesting over the next few years, and some of the things that we'll cover off today, are what are those things that employers are going to be able to do. But there it is. It's the background, what it's not, why it's there, some of those issues around it. Gerard, I don't know if you want to add to that.
Mirroring what you've said, Oliver, we find with our clients when they request emergency backup care for their staff or for some of the help regarding career progression for their staff, predominantly their female staff, when they go for maternity leave. And it really goes back to the fact that they do step away from the work, and that when they come back in, then they're missing out on the opportunities for the career progression. And as you say, it does cause quite a deficit of talent. And that's the one area that really is that they're focusing on to improve that. And I think that, you know, over time with the new reporting coming in, that obviously will highlight some issues. Yes, you're correct. The reporting in Ireland is stricter or more stringent than what it is in the UK. We'll need to see how that will pan out, what differences it will throw up. It may throw up some differences, it may not. But I think the big thing is that companies need to, I suppose, address, at least in some form, they need to address the issues that we know are there right now, and from that, at least put in place their plan. So when their reporting comes through, that they're, you know, they're ahead of the game, because you know there are quite, mm-hmm. I suppose, there's quite, shall we say, you know, there are many reasons to do this apart from the fact that it's the right thing to do. But on top of that, then there's the whole issue with, you know, their how they're viewed within the journal, by their clients, by the general public, and so on. So there's many other things that they need to address. But again, you know, yes, you're absolutely correct in what you say. In the early in the 20s, you know, there are no real differences, and it's only when a woman steps away from her role for maternity leave or career break, whatever it may be, that, you know, the issue does tend to highlight.
And I think to your point as well, Oliver, we don't have the bank of data yet for Ireland, but I'd be highly surprised if it wasn't, you know, almost exactly the same for when we do have that bank of data.
We'll break there for a quick word from our sponsor.
Getting buy-in on your people strategy can often be challenging, but it doesn't have to be. At Irish Life Health, we help HR leaders to unlock insights and make data-driven HR decisions. Join over 2,500 HR leaders who partner with us to help their employees live a healthier life. Search Irish Life Health to find out more. Irish Life Health Act is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland.
You guys are our family leave experts. This has a role to play in this, I believe. What's your thoughts? How can companies support people or females who hit that plateau or that you guys are talking about? Potentially, how could they support them? And just for our listeners, we are very conscious that we are three men talking about this on on the call, but the guys are family leave experts, and that's what they specialize in. So yeah, how can organizations be impactful on this?
Great question, and you're absolutely right. And quite often, my head of thought leadership, Jennifer Liston Smith, might have been with us, unfortunately, had prior commitments, but is definitely one of the leading experts and voices in the room when it comes to talking about everything that we're discussing now. The good news is there's a lot that employers can do. The bad news is there are no easy, quick fixes or wins. These are measures that are going to require multi-year strategies to address. Again, one of the advantage, I suppose, of Bright Horizons working both the UK and Ireland is that we work with a couple around 30 leading employers. I could name drop a few around your Facebook and Bank of America and Northern Trust and LinkedIn and so on, who are significant and major employers in both countries. Some of them have got some solutions in place, family-friendly solutions in place they've had in place for years, and we've had the privilege and the advantage of being able to look at data and seeing what you've just said, Declan, that actually there's a huge, huge similarities between the UK and the Irish labour markets, the ways in which it operates, the dynamics involved there. Because when we see the usage of things, I'll come to a minute, Gerard and I will talk in a bit more detail around things like backup care in a moment, we see that that's crucial. But just that bit on data and what can organisations do, just want to emphasise what we're talking about, what we're going to talk about shortly, are things that we've seen and known to work. And you know, we ourselves try to produce quite a bit of research around this. One of the pieces that we produce every couple of years is something called a parental leave benchmark. I'll be able to direct people towards it after the call. It's a survey that we take with leading employers of all shapes and sizes, here in the UK and in Ireland. Here in Ireland and in the UK. And we do it every 2 years. Last year was the last one. 700 firms of all sizes, all sectors responded, and they give detailed information and data on what they're doing from parental leave onwards to support family friendly, which therefore directly drives greater gender diversity, which in the long run directly leads to a narrowed gender pay gap. The data is significant because it's all anonymized. It tells us things like, you start with parental leave, you start with your policies. That's a really important bit to look at as an organization. You assess, you benchmark that. They actually use the benchmark that we produce to see where they are in the marketplace in terms of how much they're enhancing things like maternity leave, but increasingly these days, one of the things that our clients and partners in the UK have learned hugely, and actually some of the clients and partners in Ireland are already doing, is looking at things like equalising parental leave, making parental leave easier for dads to access and increasing the amount of paid weeks that dads get, because that directly impacts whether or not mum can return to work easily. When she does, if she's able to continue, if dad has been able to join in a bit more at the early stages. It's hugely popular with dads. And again, Declan, you might know, actually, I'm not entirely sure. I know in the UK there's this massive gap between a woman taking paid maternity leave, 52 weeks up to in the UK, that gets statutorily up to 2 weeks. So there's this huge gap in between. And employers increasingly have started to step into that gap rather than, you know, waiting for any laws to be changed or anything, the regulatory environment to change. And they're starting to equalise or offer more. And what we've seen is dads are taking more, which means that it's not necessarily about mums being able to return to work earlier. That's not the aim or the drive there. But it means that if dads are more involved at outset, it does often mean that mum's interested in a knock-on effect is very able to return to work more successfully. Gerard made a point earlier, and we'll come to it again, about extended period of parental leave very often means that when a working mum returns to work, there's a lot that's happened. You know, the world of business, the world of the economy is very, very fast moving. She can feel like the world has passed her by a bit. She might be two steps behind in terms of what's going on internally within the organisation. Things like equalising parental leave, really interesting that we've seen that has a direct impact on it. And it's actually, I said there are no quick or easy fixes or wins, but one of the things that a lot of organizations start doing is thinking, okay, how do we contribute to a more helping working parents to have a more balanced share of childcare responsibilities from a very early stage, which we know actually benefits us. Not just it's the right thing to do, as Gerard said, but actually this benefits our organization. So that's one thing, but there are numerous and many things that an organization can do to support. And again, the parental leave benchmark lays them out. Some of those are solutions we provide, but an awful lot aren't. They're just around what the organization does in terms of its culture. I touched on the bit about flexible working and reduced hours and part-time working, and how that was often seen as a barrier to any future progression. I'd just like to point out here that one of the very, very, very few silver linings, you might say, around the COVID and the pandemic and lockdown and how it changed the working patterns was, and some of our audience may agree or disagree to a greater or lesser amount, but one of the things it certainly proved is that people can work from home and be productive. And also that you don't need to be doing 5 days a week and 10 hours a day in the office to be making that telling contribution to the organization that gets you ahead. So that kind of slightly machismo around, you know, long working hours, depending on your skill set, your personal attributes and qualities, you might be someone that works from home 4 days a week, and yet you still make as much of a contribution to the success of your organization as someone that's in the office 5 days a week. And therefore, you can still get promoted. And this is the crucial bit. And it's actually quite marked. And I've spoken to heads of HR, heads of talent, heads of employee engagement at large organizations, banks, builders, law firms, tech companies, construction. They said, we've all seen the same thing. We're able to keep promoting women who've returned to work, who are working flexibly, working from home. We know that's no longer a barrier to productivity, who are not doing as many hours. But because, you know, for their particular skill set, they are still making that telling contribution. Maybe they just work smarter, not harder or faster, who knows. But whatever the reason is, we're seeing that we're able to keep imaginatively promoting and developing that talent.
Yeah, thankfully, I think impact has become way more important than presenteeism.
Brilliant, absolutely.
Gerard, any thoughts?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Oliver is correct in what he says there in that. And there is a huge disparity between the parental leave allowed for the dads and the mums in Ireland still, and I think it's still only the 2 weeks here for the dads. So there's still lots of work to do from a legislative perspective in that will also, you know, create a direct impact back and a benefit for the moms going back into work.
And what does good look like for an organization?
Good question. Two things around good and great. And again, without keep pointing back to it, the benchmark gives you an idea of that, and it's a really useful piece. So good is equalising parental leave, enhancing that, having flexible work policies, recognising that you can continue to develop and promote talent that is working part, you know, reduced hours or flexibly. That's all good. But then what looks really good is actually the practical support that you are putting in place as an employer to enable working parents and carers to continue to make that positive impact at work. And that's identifying the pressure points, the challenge bits. Gary's touched on it already, and I'll call out a couple of pieces. We know that working parents and carers, one of the biggest challenges they face is when care goes wrong, and that has a direct impact on their ability to continue to work properly. So backup care, emergency childcare, as Gerard referred to earlier, is a service that allows working parents and carers to access high-quality alternative care at very short notice so that they can continue to work as and when they want to. Quite frankly, back in the day, backup care was mum and dad. It was your neighbours. It was the people down the road. But these days, with increased labour mobility, both internally within a country, but also internationally, of course. Sadly, we see less of that in the UK these days with Brexit, but we know that Ireland is absolutely one of the hubs for a great deal of job migration. Gerard will be able to speak on that bit in particular. So we know that people don't necessarily have access to the traditional backup care network that they would have had as much. So having in place a service where they can access high-quality alternative professionalised childcare or adult care is something that makes a huge difference. And again, it's all in the data. And because of our client base, you know, we've got about 50-odd clients here in the UK, about 400 in the US. 400 in the UK and a few thousand in the US as well. We directly support literally hundreds of thousands of working parents and carers. And we know that on average, they're going to have 8 to 10 what we call care breakdowns a year, which means that they wouldn't be able to work. And that means for businesses are losing hundreds of thousands of work days a year that they wouldn't be able to, where their talent, their employees wouldn't be able to access. We also know that a significant proportion of your workforce are parents or carers. 40% of parents in the UK and Ireland, roughly, as many as 70% have a care responsibility of some sort. That's kind of public domain data. So putting in place something like backup care is absolutely a first step to providing the support that allows your working parents and carers to continue to make that telling contribution to the success of your organization. So again, returning to Gary's point, you're not just doing it because it's a nice thing to do or the right thing to do. You're doing it because it's a commercially sound thing to do. It's future-proofing your workplace. I'll leave Gary, if you don't mind jumping in, talking a bit more about exactly how that often operates on the ground in Ireland.
I suppose just to answer your question, what does a company who's doing this correctly look like? Well, if you can imagine, you have a working parent, they wake up in the morning and their child may not be feeling well, or they can't go to creche, or their childminder has called in sick and they have to go to work. What do they do? Well, imagine if they can make a phone call, and within a short period of time, somebody can arrive to the home and look after their child while they work, either in the home or they go to the office. So that's the ideal scenario. So if a company is providing that for their working parents, well, then that's probably the best thing they can be doing. So, but one of the things I just want to touch on is, it's great talking about this, but the real issues in Ireland at the moment are regarding finding childcare spaces. And that's the one that we're finding more and more coming through on the phone calls. And I must say, there are panicked phone calls at this stage, people trying to go back to work. It's the moments want to go back to work and they can't find somewhere to put their children into. And that's somewhere where we can help them as well in going through, I suppose, a process. And that process is a strategic process in finding childcare. Just because there aren't spaces at the moment is also about knowing where to look for them and to look at alternatives that are available. And there are always alternatives available, and there are always solutions that people may not have thought of that will at least get them through the first couple of months to allow them to get back into the routine, establish routines, and then again look more strategically at what their childcare needs are. Because childcare needs, they obviously change all the time as your work evolves, as your where you're living, as where your children will go to school and so on. So there's lots of it's a moving feast. Childcare can be a bit of a moving feast, and just to have one place may not be the best solution. So we will help people to go through all of the solutions, and there's a team within LMM Care who will talk through with the parents how best they can, you know, look at all their needs and then come up with a solution to meet at least the majority of those needs, and to allow them to, you know, be relaxed and safe, secure in the knowledge that their children are being well looked after and that they've gone through, I suppose, the most robust process in finding childcare for their children. So I think that's the biggie. Now, the government have in the recent budget, they have added substantially more money into the whole childcare section. That will filter through over the next couple of months and into next year. So things are happening. And I guess also that childcare in Ireland has gone through a period of professionalisation over the last number of years. I suppose in the last 20 years, it has moved more from the model of, you know, dropping your child off to a neighbour's house and picking them up in the evening to, you know, that the creche-based model has become more structured and more, the legislation, the Child Care Act has underpinned how all of these childcare providers now operate. It by and large works well. Yes, of course, we've had a few horror stories over the last number of years, but I do think that, you know, overall the product that's there is improving. You have the free ECCE scheme for children. You now have the National Childcare Scheme. Mm-hmm. So there's money being put into the thing. The big problem still is supply, and that hasn't been addressed as of yet. Hopefully, the more recent announcements regarding what they call the core funding may encourage more people to go back in and to set up creches or childcare facilities, or indeed that more of them will open. Again, you know, looking for the ideal solution, you know, would a company be interested in setting up some form or subsidizing childcare for their working parents, either on site? I know a number of them have done so. With good success, and that's something I know that, you know, the Bright Horizons look at as well. So there's it goes back, I guess, to, you know, how far the company want to go, and really when they look at how much they're going to spend on this whole process, and to see then what return they're getting. So there's lots of questions. It's not just, I suppose, one size fits all, but the real thing is that we can help people to get appropriate childcare, do it strategically, and that allows them to go through the process as seamlessly as possible, with as least stress as possible.
I've lived the exact problems you're describing there, Geraint. Yep. So I can totally relate to that. Just an observation, as we, you know, we've talked about gender pay gap and how this impacts it, and quite correctly, it's an exceptionally difficult problem to unpick, but we have to unpick it. One thing that is clearly systemic in society is that when, and I am generalizing here and I totally appreciate that, but generally speaking, when a child is sick, more often than not, it falls on mum, and that's then impacting career potentially.
Absolutely. Again, like you say, generalizing to a degree, but broadly true. And in fact, And forgive me for pointing back to the UK again, but as I said, there are so many parallels here that we see. The BBC actually released some research that they'd done during lockdown that showed that mums were assuming 70% of childcare responsibilities whilst working from home with school-aged children, where you had that kind of twin challenge of trying to work from home and adjusting to that. And also with schools closed, and we know that's exactly the case here in Ireland as well, during that lockdown, schools closed, so you're trying to homeschool your child. And we all learned what a great job teachers do, actually. We realised just how difficult that was, taking it for granted. Parents of primary school children in particular would really struggle with that piece, trying to work for work. And when I say parents, I mean the mums. That was definitely the case, 70% at least. And that was good, solid research showing that, again, from good data sets. So, you know, and just looping back Gary's point and what you said there, Declan, as I know we start to wrap up, is the availability of paid childcare places directly impacts the ability of women to enter the workplace or stay in the workplace or continue to progress. So when organisations are thinking, what's that got to do with me? We're saying it. You've got to think not one step back or two. You've got to be aware of the wider context massively, because you will be looking to improve or narrow your gender pay gap over the next, and as I said, no quick things. You won't be doing it in a year or two. It's probably going to take you a 3 to 5 to even a 10-year journey before you get to anywhere that you want to be. You think about all of this stuff.
Yeah, really, couldn't agree more. Guys, thanks so much for sharing your insights today. We'll link below the podcast some contact details if organizations want to maybe step up and try and bridge that gap for some of their employees. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you, Declan.
Thank you very much.
HRHeadquarters.ie, the podcast.
Brought to you by Irish Life Health.